Okay, guys, I sort of explain quickly a little bit of what Shirkhali is and what the point of it is. So as you know, thank God I write this a very varied yeshiva. There are a lot of different shurim, different subjects, different styles, different levels. So there aren't so many times that we have a joint experience of learning together. So one of the nice things about Shirkhali is that once a week we have that experience. The whole yeshiva learns a topic together every Thursday at 12. That is one nice aspect of Shirkhali. Number two, as you know, we're a yeshiva that believes in a broad curriculum. You'll hear this from me many times. Maybe I'm not so yeshivish or Rosh Yeshiva. It's okay with me if you guys enjoy Tanakh more than Gemara. It's okay with me if you enjoy Machshava more than Gemara. I do not view it as religious failure in the slightest. At the same time, you know, Gemara is a big part of what it means to be a religious Jew. So we thought Shirkhali is also kind of a way of some joint Gemara excitement. We're not only all learning together, we're learning a Gemara Sugya together. Number three, very often in the world of yeshiva, people will know a lot about the Masechet they studied in yeshiva. So you guys might say, I know a lot about Sukkah and Baba Kama at the end of this year. But you don't really encounter the rest of Shas so much. So we actually do something a little bit unusual. You can check with your friends. In a lot of yeshiva, Shirkhali is another topic within the Masechet that you're learning. And we actually don't do that. It could be any topic in Shas, that just to get some exposure to other concepts. So I think that's a very good thing. The last thing I'll say, you should just realize the way it works is that I give 3 out of 4, and then the other Rebbeim do a rotation. So you will get a chance to hear other Rebbeim give Shirkhali as well, although I will give the majority of it. Okay, before we start, guys, one last piece of information. It seems to me this year some of you, Shana Aleph, have advanced knowledge about yeshiva. Like, somehow, David Bentor knew to wear a flowery shirt to Shirkhali. Like, win the flowery shirt award for the first Shirkhali. So I'm not sure where he got that inside information from. Did you speak to Joey Gedalia? Okay. I suspected as much. Okay. In any case, let's do a little background for today's topic. A little background. Okay, now if we think about the Amidah, here's a good trivia question, right? The Amidah has 3 different numbers, right? The Shemona Esrei could be 19 brachot long, 7 brachot long, or 9 brachot long. Now 9 is, of course, the anomaly. Okay, obviously, when is the Amidah 19 brachot long? Every day, right? 3 times a day. Okay, obviously, we have to figure out why it's called Shemona Esrei, but that's a topic for another time. Okay? Oh, you know what it's like, guys? Actually, let's do that. Why not? You should all know this. Okay, why is it called Shemona Esrei if it is 19 brachot long? Which one got added? Excellent, excellent. You know what it's like, guys? You've heard of Dennis Prager and Joseph Telushkin? So they wrote a book called The 8 Questions People Ask About Judaism. And then the second edition was called The 9 Questions People Ask About Judaism. Because I guess somebody asked a new question in the intervening years. So they moved it from 8 to 9. Okay, but Shmoneh Esrei did not change his name. They just stuck with Shmoneh Esrei, even though it got a 19th bracha. Great. So that's when it's 19th bracha long. When is it 7 brachot long? Yeah, every Shabbat and Yom Tov. Because what do we famously do? We remove all... What gets removed on Shabbos and Yom Tov? All the requests. Now, this is not my topic, but interesting food for thought. What could one argue? Why do we move requests on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Maybe requests aren't so appropriate for Shabbos. Like, to think about what you need, what you lack. Maybe Shabbos is more about tranquility, about what you have. But here, this is not my topic at all, guys. I just like to give you guys food for thought. Is it really true that we cancel all bakashot on Shabbat?
No.
Okay, guys, give me a good proof it's not really true. Yeah, think about El Kainitzar. How about even earlier in the Amidah, guys? Give me an earlier example in the Amidah. Sim Shalom and Shalom Rav is one big request. I know we call it part of the Thanksgiving part of the Amidah, but it's not true. It's one request. It's a beautiful request, but it's all requests. So we had food for thought. Is it really true that there's this concept of canceling requests on Shabbos or Yom Tov? But just one nafkina. You're all going to love this. You know, the whole yeshiva is going to adopt this practice now. Okay, do you know how the grub benches on Shabbos? He drops all the harachmans. Can anyone do that? Anyone that personal family minute? Eli Jerusha, where'd that come from? Okay. Eli, can I ask you a good phone call? Okay. Eli Jerusha, an honest guy. It's an obvious hakir to be asked here. Does Eli drop it because he's a really from guy who wants to be like the grub? Or just so convenient to have a shorter benching? Eli Jerusha, which is it?
Second.
Okay, there you go. Okay, but why would the Grud drop the Harachmans? It would be the same idea, right? Benching is pretty much a thanksgiving to get to the Rachmans. The Rachmans are more request-oriented. So you say if Shabbos is not a time for requests, maybe the Rachmans shouldn't be part of benching on Shabbat. Okay, great, guys. So we have 19 on weekdays and 7 on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So, of course, the anomaly is 9. When do we have 9? Excellent, Rosh Hashanah. And but even more specific, guys, specifically Rosh Hashanah, Musaf. So it's really an anomaly, right? All year round, it's either 19 or 7. Rosh Hashanah Musaf is 9. Now, why is Rosh Hashanah Musaf 9? Because there are three themes we like to talk about. And we want to sneak in all three themes and give each theme a bracha. Okay, what are the three themes? Malchiot, God's kingship, Zichronot, and Shofar. Each one gets its own bracha. You might remember we quote a lot of psukim. We quote 10 psukim for each of the three, and they have a bracha. Now, I'm not going to get into it right now, but just for the philosophers in the room. Okay, there was a famous Jewish philosopher named Franz Rosenzweig, who said that all of Judaism is three themes, creation, revelation, and redemption. Okay, you could look him up. And he claims that that's Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofar. So those of you who want to think about it, how it matches up, you could think about it. Okay, really give you a lot of food for thought today. Arguably, Birkat Kriyat Shema is the same three themes. Just think about it. But in any case, we're not going to do philosophy now. We're going to do Lundus. Okay, so that is Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofar. Okay, so what do we have in Rosh Hashanah now, guys? We've got these brachot that we want to say. The bracha of Malchiot, the bracha of Zichronot, the bracha of Shofar. And we have Tkiyat Shofar. So today's shiur is going to be about the relationship and the comparison between these two things. This Rosh Hashanah is going to come. We're going to try to fulfill both mitzvah. We're going to try to fulfill the Tkiyat Shofar mitzvah and the Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofar recitation. And let's see how they compare, how they play out. Okay, Emmett Hirsch, is Emmett here? Where is he? Emmett, you ready?
Yeah.
I have a good math tangent for you, which I just discovered for my son.
Okay. Can you speak louder, though?
I'll do my best. Okay, there was a famous mathematician who published a paper together with a co-author named F.C. Willard. Have you ever heard of this?
Wait, is this the one where he published with his dead co-author?
Well, it was a cat. It was his cat.
Oh.
Okay, did you know that?
No, I've heard of this. Yes.
Okay, wow, tremendous. Okay, so he published together with his cat, and the people did journals. Okay, there must be some mathematician we never heard of called F.C. Willard. Okay, so, if you get this, you're really amazing. Why would you go with FC if you're a cat? What does F stand for?
Yeah.
Oh, pretty good there. Yoni, you speak Latin?
Shir
Chloe Zerman gets his Latin in there. Okay, so, but the funny thing is, when other people discovered it, the other mathematicians thought it was really funny, they all started to like thank him in their footnotes. Right? And I'd also like to thank FC Willard for looking at my paper and providing helpful comments. So guys, go look at it online. If next time, those of you going to math, you could thank your cat as your co-author. Okay, so in any case, let's see what the status of the Tkiyat Shofar is and what the status of the brachot are. Okay, so everyone, let's go a little out of order, guys. Let's go to source 3. Okay, source 3. So it says, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, a mitzvah betoken yotim in amavarchim. What is a mitzvah that has more weight? The Tkiyat Shofar, the brachot? Shofar is where it's really at. Ketzad, what will be a test case? You have two cities, Ba'achat Token, Uva'achat Mavarchin. What if there's very limited Jewish resources 1 year? So only one city's got a shofar, and the adjacent city's the only one that's got a sitter. And no one knows the tefillah by heart. So if I go to the shofar city, I'll get the Tkiyat Shofar. If I go to the sitter city, I'll get the brachot. Right? Everyone realize the brachot here, it's not a Sher Kitchon Svenu Tkoh B'Shofar. Okay, we're talking about the brachot of Malchit Zichronot and Shofar. Okay, so what do I do? Hochin l'makom shetoken, the ain hochin l'makom shemavarchim. So what does Rosh Hashanah conclude? Go with?
Shofar.
So apparently one thing we know for sure, shofar is where it's really at. Shofar is more weight in halacha than Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofar. But not only is that true, but look what the Gemara says now, guys. Pshita. What kind of question is pshita? It's obvious. I mean, now is it true? It's so true, you didn't need to say it. We should all realize that shofar has more weight than the bracha. Why is it so obvious? Here we go. Hadaraita, hadarabanan. Ah, I see. This guy's ready to have it down here. Okay, do you think I can say the word sage or no chance? Okay, here we go, guys. Somehow every year, certain words cause like a chanting response, and I have to avoid those words for the rest of the year. So we'll see which words I like that this year. Okay. What? I will get there. I'm not trying to do it the first week. We'll see. Wait, who's the Sharaf guy who should be most made fun of for stone? Who's the biggest stone fanatic? Eisen? Micah Eisen? Micah, are you here?
Yeah.
Okay, are you the biggest stone fanatic in Sharaf?
I don't want to say biggest,
and I'm
guys.
Okay. Oh, what a modest fellow. I like to refer to stone as the benign cult. Okay, it's a cult, but it doesn't take advantage. Does not take advantage of its practitioners. So it's a benign cult. Okay? So if you ever make reference to the benign cult, you now know what it is. Okay. So, all right. I have to tell you a great story about Sodok. Mike, you know this story, okay? So my son, Sodok, the one who's your age, or 19, so he's the same year as the Rothner twins, as Rachia and Avram Rothner. Yeah. So when they're really young, I think they're like 8, they're playing at one of these apples-to-apples games or something like that, and the word cult came up, and the Rothner twins didn't know what it was. So my son says, you know, it's this place with, like, you know, everybody thinks there's the meaning of life, you know, like Camp Stone. And then Adina calls out from the kitchen, that's not true. Okay. All right, here we go, guys. Okay, so the answer is, one is Doraita and one's Darabanan. Okay, so it seems to be, what do we have here? Clearly, shofar blowing has more weight than the brachot. And what would be a basic reason we have more weight than the brachot? Well, we all know one way of making value judgments in Judaism is Doraita things have more weight than Darabana things. So it's a mitzvah Doraita to blow the shofar. Apparently saying the brachot's only a mitzvah Darabana. Okay, we're all good? So things seem pretty straightforward. Okay, however, now we're going to make things a bit more complicated. Okay, let us go to source 6. I know we're going out of order, but we're going to put it all together. Now, in source 6, there's a debate about how the Malchiyot, Tzichonot, and Shofar work. What do we do today, guys? So here there's actually an Ashkenazi-Sephardi split, actually a Nusach-Sephardi. How many people daven either Sephardi or Nusach-Sephardi or Chabad? Okay, there you go. So I have to admit, I've always wanted to experience this because I'm Ashkenazi, I've never experienced this. When do we blow shofar, we Ashkenazim? During Chazaret Hashatz, right, during the repetition of the Amidah, we'll say the Malchut passage, blow shofar. We'll say the Zichronu passage, and blow shofar. Guys, who knows what Sephardim do? They do it during the silent Amidah. And that requires a lot more coordination, right? Because everybody's up to their own thing, and people have to wait. I've always wanted to experience this. I've never experienced it. Okay, anyone here daven Chabad? I think Chabad does it also, right? No, nobody goes Chabad? No, right? Chabad does it? Okay. Where have you experienced it? Oh, there you go, guys. Okay. Tell better. Okay, you guys know it's very popular now for people who are Breslovs or Breslov sympathizers to go to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so Rav Dovidel has experienced it in Uman. So you guys want good stories, ask Rav Dovidel about his trip to Uman for Rosh Hashanah. Okay, but in any case, but there is a commonality, though. Okay, everybody, to some degree, is integrating the Tkiot and the Brachot. It's just that Ashkenazim are only doing it in the repetition of the Amidah, and Sfardim and Chabadniks and other Nusach Sfarad are doing it even in the silent Amidah. Okay, but you should realize there was another day in the Mishnah. There was Rav Yochanan ben Nuri who thought that Malchiot doesn't get connected with shofar. I'm not going to get into why. He had the same amount of shofar blowing, but not together with Malchiot. So just look at the language of the Gemara, guys. This is very interesting language. Source 6. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees. Now, we follow Rabbi Akiva. We do blow shofar for all three. For Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofar. What's Rabbi Akiva's language here? Only Rabbi Akiva, Eino toke le Malchiot, lama hu maskir. Says Rabbi Akiva, if you're not going to blow, you might as well not. Lama hu maskir. Don't even say it. Right? You need to blow. Don't say Malchiot if you're not going to blow shofar with it. Look at this response, guys. This is crucial. What is my response for Yochanan ben Nuri? Lama hu maskir. Why should I mention it? Rachmana Amar Idkar. Now, it's a Dalet Zayin rule, guys. So, Idkar is really Iskar. Guys, I'm going to get this down a little. Guys, I'm going to teach you all how to speak Aramaic, okay? You guys ready? Okay, you only need to know three things. You need to know what Aleph's, the Shin Tuf rule, and the Dalet Zayin rule. Then, now, after that, you all speak Aramaic. Let's try that quickly, guys. How do you say world in Aramaic? Alma. Notice what happened? Olam just becomes Alma. Put an Aleph at the end, you're good to go. Okay, what happens to shin sounds in Hebrew when they go to Aramaic? Like, how do you say three in Aramaic? Tlat. So shalosh becomes tlat. Okay, and dalids, zions, tend to become dalids. Okay, now that we did that, guys, prove to you all are intuitive Aramaic speakers. Okay, how do you say gold in Aramaic? Guess what? Dahava. Why is it dahava? Because the zion becomes a dalid and... But now, at the end. Okay, now this is just, I'll tell you a story, just you'll see that I'm a little bit weird. Okay, so I'm in a Uber car in Manhattan for the first time in my life, and my driver is Yemenite. He's from Yemen. Not Jewish, just a Yemenite guy. I'm trying to think, how am I make conversation with this guy from Yemen? What could I possibly say? So I say to him, I know a little Arabic. He says, really? That's interesting. You never went in an Arab country. Why do you know Arabic? I said, I can tell you how to say snow in Arabic. He says, how do you say it? So I just guessed. I said, Thalga. He says, that's absolutely right. How do you know that? Okay, because Arabic's very similar to Aramaic, except instead of a T, it's a F, right? So I figured if snow in Aramaic is Talga, right, the shin becomes a Taf, and you put an Aleph at the end. So now you guys, now you can talk to your Yemeni Uber drivers, right? Just tell them, foul, go snow, be very excited. You're good to go. Okay, so now, let's go back here, guys. So what is Midkar? It's Miskar, to mention. So what does it mean, guys? Rachmana Amar Idkar. What does that mean, guys? The Torah said to... Literally, Rachman means the merciful one. But how is it used in Gemara? God in the Torah said to mention it. Wait, can we see we now in the world of contradiction? What do we just say? Why do you say these brachot? Why do you say Malchut, Tzichron, and Shofrot? The Torah says. So now we've got a classic conflict. Right? On the one hand, you have, what did it say in the Gemara in Lama Dalet? Tkiyat Shofar's Deraita, and these Tfilot are Derabanan. But what do you have here on Lamed Bet? The idea that the Torah said to say them, and even had, quote some psukim later. Can you skip that a little bit to Rabbi Elazar Omer? It says, Elazar Omer, Tichtiv, Shabbaton, Zichron, Shua, Mekakodesh, Shabbaton, Zichtushidim, Zichron, Elu, Zichrono, Shrua, Elu, Shofar, etc., etc. We seem to be deriving these brachot from psukim. But now, guys, we get to a great point, guys. Because Gemara is really a good way to teach you how to think and how to analyze. Okay? If, let's think about different things I could do. I could think of three different things I could do to solve this problem. Again, what's my problem here, guys? That one source says Deraita, one source says Derabbanan. Okay, we're good? All right, let's see who's around here. Where's Dover Enner?
Here.
Okay. This year I don't have any like good sports tangents, so I'm not sure I'm going to turn to you, but we'll see. Maybe something's going to come up. Okay, hang in there. Like, the history of college basketball might still be like, you know, 5 minutes away. Okay. All right, here we go, guys. Okay. What would be different ways to solve this problem? If one source indicates the Raita, one source indicates the Rabbanan. Give me a couple of basic ways you might try to go about to resolve the contradiction. Who has a suggestion how to resolve the contradiction? Anybody with a suggestion? David, excuse me. I'm sorry? Okay, good. So David Mitzvah's on the right track. One way is to claim that they're both true. Okay? It's somehow both the Raita and the Rabbanan. There's a Deraita component and a Derabanan component. Very good. Can I think of a different kind of answer before we get back to it? Eli Jarosho. Okay, and what? Where do you want to go with that? Maybe. Ah, very good. What if I try to neutralize one of the sources? That somehow Deraita did not really mean Deraita, or Derabanan did not really mean Derabanan. So notice the difference. David Ben-Tor is saying, take both Gemara at face value. Deraita is correct and Derabanan is correct. We'll just have to work out when one is correct, when the other is correct. The other approach that Ellie's suggesting is to say, maybe I have to reread one of the sources. I misinterpreted one of the sources, I took it too seriously or too literally. Now, if I'm going to reread Deraita or Derabanan, I think he's right. The better way to go probably would be to reread Deraita. Because as many of you know, actually I don't feel well know, but probably we're a pretty knowledgeable group here, there's something called an asmachta. Okay, what's an asmachta? Anyone know? Except for one thing, guys. You might be thrown off here. I'll tell you, might be thrown off. Oh, everyone get this down, guys. This is going to be on the final. Okay, two Talmudic... There's no final, don't worry. Two Talmudic meanings... I started getting nervous there, David. Okay, two Talmudic meanings of the word asmachta. Okay, I'll tell you why you all might know the other meaning. Because high schools always look for topics that their students will find interesting. So a lot of high schools like to learn Sanhedrin. Okay, how many of you guys did Sanhedrin in high school? Oh, well, see, I guess it's true. Okay, was that on the old DRS curriculum? Oh, there you go. And it's a good choice. I admit it. It's a good choice, Sanhedrin. And one of the Sigurs people like a lot is who's invalid to be a witness. You guys did that one?
Yeah.
And you remember that the gambler is invalid? Is that ringing a bell for a lot of you?
Yeah.
Now, you might recall that when it's trying to figure out why the gambler is invalidated, what factors come up, guys, why the gambler might be invalidated? Okay, but let's do the other one first. You guys are too knowledgeable. Some say he doesn't produce anything for society. He's not oseik b'yeshuvo shalom. It's a very powerful idea. Like, your profession should do something to help people out, right? It shouldn't just be you take money, people's money away. Okay, so the claim is that he's not oseik b'yeshuvo shalom. But the Gemara also says that it might be an asmachta, right? The whole endeavor of gambling might be an asmachta. Now, here we go, guys. In that context, what does asmachta mean? A form of? It's actually a form of theft. The idea that the gambler didn't really agree to lose his money. Okay, I'm not to debate it right now. We'll discuss it some other time. But there's one kind of asmachta in the Gemara. Asmachta could be someone gives them money without really willingly giving it up, and it's somehow akin to theft. Okay, but that's not what we mean over here. What's the other meaning of a smachta, guys? When the Rabbanon make up a din, but they hang it on a pasuk. Okay, that is another meaning of the word asmachta. Why would the Rabbanon do that? So it's an interesting three-way debate, which I'm not going to go into right now, but you could just say it's a mnemonic device. Like, think about the top, before the Gemara is written down, guys. What's your concrete information? The psukim, that's what you have in front of you. What's the easiest way to remember halacha? If you could connect the idea to a pasuk. So maybe at that point, the Rabbanon were willing to do that, even for dinim de Rabbanon. But the mere fact that I cite a pasuk doesn't absolutely prove that it's the right. So let's just sum up for 1 second where we are at this point, guys, then I'll take comments. Okay, where are we? We have two basic approaches here. We have a contradiction, is it the right to de Rabbanon? We have the Eli Jarosh approach, don't take the right to so seriously. It was hyperbole, it was an asmachta, it was an exaggeration, it's really all the Rabbanon, that's what's going on. Or we could say the David Bentor approach, that somehow they're the right elements and the Rabbanon elements, but we'd like to figure out what they are. Okay, anybody with a comment or question on where we're holding thus far? David, you're good? Everybody good? Okay. Let's see, who should we go with next? Okay, Yoni Kurtz, how you doing?
Good.
Where is he? Oh, there he is. Everything's good? Okay. Guys, I'm going to give some good news to Yoni Kurtz. Even though he was the silver medalist in Jeopardy, I'm very confident they're going to win eventually. Okay, they're going to be this team. They're going to be like the Brooklyn Dodgers from the 50s. Oh, here we go. Dover Adam, Brooklyn Dodgers from the 50s.
Say it again.
Brooklyn Dodgers from the 1950s. You remember that? They kept losing to the Yankees. And finally, in 55, they won. You remember that? Come on, Dover Adam. Okay. You don't do the history of baseball? All right, one last try, guys. Josh Hall, where is he? Is he here? Okay, when Josh Hall comes back, we'll check it out. Okay, that's it? None of you remember the Brooklyn Dodgers from the 50s? Okay. Yoni Kurtz, that's you. Okay? That's you. Okay, you're gonna win the title. Okay. So let's see if we could play out a little bit more who's right here. Will we go with the Eli Jarosh approach or the David Bentor approach? Okay, so let's take a look at the first source. Okay? One more proof, and then we'll see a brilliant idea from Rav Soloveitchik. Okay. One more proof. Okay, source one. Now, what? Besides in Gemara, guys, in Talmud Torah in general, besides learning analytical skills, okay, I think one of the things you get very much is learning how to be a good reader. And that's a tremendous skill for life. To learn how to be a good reader, read closely, notice language issues. So we're going to do an example of this right here. Notice I have to be closer. Here we go, guys. Tanya Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Akiva in the first source. Mifnei Ma'am Ratorah Hevi Omer B'Pesach. Why do we bring a famous carbon called the carbon Omer on the second day of Pesach? It's a barley offering. Mifnei Shav Pesach Zman Tuhu. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Hevi Omer Pesach Deis Parech Lechem Tvur Sheb Esadot. Again, we do not live in an agrarian society. We don't know the world of agriculture. But a lot of humans do, and a lot of humans in history did. And the Chagim clearly have an agricultural component, which I think we're kind of blind to. I'll give you an example. Okay, who lives in Manhattan here? There we go. Okay, Josh Milstein. So let's say Josh Milstein. If you say Josh Milstein, is it, I don't know, tomato season? Josh says there's no such thing as tomato season, right? It is all, in Manhattan, it is always tomato season, right? Because, you know, again, if we don't grow it locally, we'll bring it from somewhere else, right? There's no such thing. Okay, but a lot of the world does not live that way. Okay, a lot of the world will have, even Israel, you have a sense that, oh, it's not, you know, my wife will write, I do the shopping on Wednesday nights, right? She'll write summer fruit. Now, there's a reason why it's called summer fruit, right? Because Israel will not have peaches and nectarines in January. Okay, so I should buy the summer fruit now. Okay, so we're a little bit out of touch with agriculture, but halacha and mitzvot actually are much more in touch with the seasonal, with agricultural. Okay, so what does it say here? Bring the Omer on Pesach. So, Joshua, I have to ask a question in 5 minutes. Okay, bring the Omer on Pesach so that the Tvu will be blessed. It has to do with the agricultural cycle. Next. Why do you bring a bread offering on Shavuos? Again, without getting into details, how to do the agricultural season. Oh, this is also good to know, guys. And a good word. There's something called a libation offering. What's a libation offering? When I pour a liquid on the Mizbeach. But here, Sukkos is unique. What is the material used in libation offerings all year long?
Wine.
With one exception being? Sukkot. All of a sudden, Sukkot, you use water. Why is that? Right, don't forget, it's Israel. Israel is a place where we need rain. When does the rain season start? Sukkos. Right, so that's a good time to have all kinds of water ritual, right? We are praying for a good amount of water. Okay, here it comes, guys. Last one. So what do we say? We explain the carbon on Pesach. We explain the carbon on Shavuos. We explain the libation offering on Sukkos. Here we go. Amlufanai b'Rosh Hashanah malchiyot tzurchon v'shofot. And this is what you should do on Rosh Hashanah. Malchiyot k'dei shetamchuni lechem zechono k'dei sheyal zechon lufanai u'meh b'shofot. Excellent, guys. But now let's be close readers. If I say we have four categories here, which one of the four is expressed very differently than the other three? Again, we had why we do what we do on Pesach, why we do what we do on Shavuot, why we do what we do on Sukkot, and then why we do what we do on Rosh Hashanah. But a close reader will notice that there was a big shift there. Akiva Garner. And you guys notice that? Three times it says Mifnei Ma Amra Torah. What does it say the fourth time? V'amru. Now, what would you make of that? Akiva Garner, very good. What would you make of that? Excellent. So Akiva Garner's point, one of the great achronim, the Pnei Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua Falk, I think you'll probably do some Pnei Yeshua this year in Sukkah. The Pnei Yeshua says, that's what we should derive from there. Right? It shifts terminology because we're no longer in the world of Doraita, because it's not Doraita to recite Malchiyot Zichronot and Shofar. So if the Pnei Yeshua's close reading is a good inference, what will emerge? It'll emerge, we have a proof for the Eli Jarosh approach as opposed to the David Ben-Tor approach, right? Again, we had the right to verse the Rabbanan. Again, if this inference is right, here's more source material indicating that the brachot of Rosh Hashanah are the Rabbanan, not the right. Okay, everyone got that? Okay, great. Josh Hall, can we test you on your knowledge of baseball? You remember the Brooklyn Dodgers from the 50s? No? Okay, could we try one more thing, Josh? Who broke the color barrier in baseball? Who's the first African-American player? Oh, Joshua, come on. You're a knowledgeable fellow. All right, is Rafael here? Rafael? Okay, where is he? Okay, this might be unfair, but we'll see like how Americanized you've been the last 3 years. Who broke the color barrier in baseball? Okay. Who broke the color barrier in Belgian football? You can say anything. I have no idea what the answer is. Okay. Anyone know? Is that a thing in European soccer? Was there somebody who broke the color barrier? Anyone know? Anyway? All right, we have to do some research before next year, calling. Okay, yeah. Wait, you follow Formula One racing? Oh, my God. David, I have to make fun of you for 1 second. You know why I can't ask the question? Because nobody's broken the color barrier yet. Okay. Okay, I'm sorry. It's okay. Is that true? There are African American race drivers? The best one is there, really?
The fourth best is Jewish.
What's his name?
Lewis Hamilton.
Okay. I have to admit, even though I do follow sports, I do not follow race car driving. I'm actually not 100% convinced it's a sport, but that's another topic. Okay. In any case, Josh Hall. Okay, Josh was a fellow named Jackie Robinson. Okay, go do some homework. Do a little work after night's in, okay? What is that? God, okay. All right, guys, back to us over here. So now we're going to try to work out the David Ben-Tor theory. Okay, we'll try to work out the David Ben-Tor theory. But Rav Soloveitchik says something really clever. Because I think David Ben-Tor had a very good theory, but you want to spell it out a bit more. Like he said, I'm going to rephrase his point, maybe the brachot could both be deraita and rabbanan. Now, the way David said it was, some aspects would be deraita, and other aspects would be the Rabbanan. But that's very good. What if I say it slightly differently, that the same bracha could be the right Rabbanan based on some external factor? Like, if it's realized one way, it's the right. If it's manifest and realized a different way, it's the Rabbanan. Does anyone have some way I could say that? Like, what could I do with a bracha that would make them the right? And then what would I be missing in a bracha that would then make them the Rabbanan? Akiva G. Okay, interesting. You would say the Birkat HaMitzvah. Not bad. Anybody else with a suggestion? Simcha Molina.
You couple it with the shofar.
Where'd you get that idea from? Okay, oh my God. Okay, we got the London of the year here. The happy raspberry. All right, here we go, guys. Raspberry, right?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. What? I'll explain right now. Everybody go to source 8. Okay, source 8. This is a beautiful idea by Rav Soloveitchik. Okay. case sourcing. Guys, Rav Soloveitchik was kind of a perfectionist, so he didn't like to publish very much in his lifetime. But I give you a good word for life, guys. If you're a famous Talmud Chacham, you probably should publish. Because what's going to happen if you don't publish? Someone else will publish your ideas. I mean, they won't steal it from you necessarily, but you won't have a chance to express it because people want to get your Torah out there. So since Rav Soloveitchik passed away, he's become infinitely more prolific. Right? More and more svarim of Rav Soloveitchik come out. Okay, so here, this is someone quoting Rav Soloveitchik, but it's a beautiful idea. Shebircha malchiyot zichonet v'shofarot havi deraita. Rak shebirchot bod. Here's the keyword, guys. Betziruf imhat kiyot. What's betziruf? Together with. This is very clever. What if the brachot, in their ideal form, how are they meant to be appear? Integrated together with shofar blowing. So when I blow shofar, then the brachot have to write the status. When I don't blow shofar, what status do they have? The rabbanon status. But now the Gemara is tremendous. It works out great. If I'm talking about the brachot per se, how should I refer to them? As the writer of the rabbanon? Yeah, sorry, when I mean per se, I mean my usual kiyum of the brachot. The right there, what's going to happen the average year? I will integrate them with the tekiot, and they'll be the right there. So I could say, Rachmana Amar Idkar, the Torah said to say these brachot. But why is it work great in that Gemara, guys? What was the one Gemara that said it was Durbanan? Yeah?
It was when it was either only shofar only.
Excellent. Jack is there? Yeah. Jack is absolutely right. Right, very good. Right, but that's perfect, because the only time it called the Durbanan was the city that didn't have a shofar. So there where it's going to be detached from shofar blowing, there it'll be reduced to a derubanan. Simcha, excellent. Okay, so now we've worked out two really good theories, guys. We have theory one, that deraita never really meant deraita. Don't take it so seriously. Or theory two, no, they're both true. If I do it with the tekiot, it is indeed deraita. If I do it without the tekiot, then it's only derubanan. Okay? All right, David Edwards, how did you get so into Formula 401? Does that happen? Is your dad into it? Yeah, is your mom into it? Okay. Okay, good. That's a sign of health. Okay, excellent. So now, okay, let's go to the next point, which is, now one of these you'll see in a writer, guys, is we like the quest for meaning. So when we're learning Gemara, that's also part of the operation here. So is there some kind of deeper idea, some machshava idea, like why this would be true? Like it's easy to say. Easy to say that the brachot are only doraita when they're together with the tekiot. But what is it about the tekiot that enhances the brachot? Why do these two things specifically go together? Everyone got the point? Okay, so we are going to go a little bit out of order and go to source 12. I really wanted to say this for the last 5 minutes, but I think it'll jazz up the shiur right now. Let's go to source 12. Okay, now Rav Soloveitchik, of course, and of course, I shouldn't say that. Okay, actually, no, we have, the two Maimonides guys. Where's Eitan? There's Ben. Where's Eitan? Okay. Eitan, did you have a course in Rav Soloveitchik in Maimonides?
We did.
Who taught it? Rabbi Jaffe? Rabbi Chesses. The one who's the rabbi in Sharon?
Yes.
Okay, did you take it?
Yes.
Ben Wold, were you in there?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are serious. Rav Soloveitchik, guys. So if I make any like Lonely Man of Faith references, you'll get them?
Probably not.
Okay. Okay. Guy. Oh, SCR does one also? Oh, Shalevitz into it? Who teaches Rav Soloveitchik there? Okay, he's a good man, Ray Schwartzberg. All right, guys. By the way, Ben and Eitan are going to struggle this Shabbos. We'll have to help them out, guys, right? Because they're going to spend all Shabbos wondering if the Celtics won Friday night, and there's no Irish bar in the old city where they can just walk in and get the information. Okay, so don't worry, Ben, they're going to win. Don't worry. You'll find out in Motsash. It's going to be okay.
I got this.
Okay. All right, so in any case, guys, here we go. So Rav Soloveitchik used to give two major drushot every year. One was during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. That's why there's a book called Al HaTshuva, On Repentance, which is very, very worthwhile. I'd highly recommend it. I think the yeshiva has it in Hebrew and English. And he used to give a drasha on his father's yahrzeit. Okay, so that's a book called Shiurim L'Zecha Abamari. He used to give a big shiur. And it's an amazing thing. We don't think of people this way. Guys, like 1,000 people would attend. And Rav Soloveitchik would speak for like 4 hours. 1,000 people come listen to Rav Soloveitchik speak for 4 hours. Okay, which is pretty remarkable. Okay, Akiva Garner cannot imagine it. See, Akiva Garner, the world of Neo Hasidus doesn't do 4 hours. Just Twitter. Okay. So, in any case, you can laugh at me. It's okay. So, here we go, guys. So let's see what Rav says. I think you guys will all enjoy this. It's really a powerful idea. Let's see Rav Soloveitchik in Source 12. B'sidr shvacho shel makom. If you want to praise God, nemrabo shtei halachot, there's two ideas. Shelemara ayin sotrot hine hadadid. It would seem that there's sotrot. No, the other meaning, guys, not seter hidden, but? What's a stira? Very good, sage. They contradict each other. Okay, what are the two? What are the two halachot that seem to contradict each other? Mitzad achad yeshon l'saper b'shvacho shel makom. Ulhagin neflotav. Surely a believing person would want to praise God. Like, we're only here because God made us. Right? We want to praise Him. What, where is that manifest? Dor l'dor yishabach ma'asecha u'gversech yagidu. Hadar kvod u'decha v'tir nefotech asicha. V'zuzner techi merit l'scha saprena. We'll tell about His greatness. Mitzad sheni. What's the second side of the coin? Yeshna mitzvat shtika v'domia. What's the second theme? The theme of silence. Why? Okay, I think we all have a sense of the inadequacy of language. And especially if we're trying to describe the divine, if we're trying to describe the transcendent, right? Because our language is not made for the divine and the transcendent. Our language is made for our world. So I think we could say that our language is inadequate. And by the way, I think we could go one step further, if you want. I think many of us might even argue, not just for the divine and the transcendent. Maybe language is just inadequate in general. Now, I'm not saying we should give it up. It's the only tool we've got. But I know, let's say you had a really moving experience. Let's go with Jacob Isselstein. What's your favorite rock band?
I don't know.
You don't have a favorite rock band. All right, we'll go with somebody else. David Feynman, what's your favorite musician? Okay, so let's say David Feynman goes to a Rush concert. I can't name a single Rush song, so I'm not going to make a reference. He goes to a Rush concert, and he has a great experience there. It gives him a rush, one might say. Sorry. Rabbi joke. Okay, so there we go. And now he comes back to the dorm, and Jacob says, what was it like? Wouldn't David feel like I can't really capture it? Words are inadequate, right? Words are not they're the best we've got, but they're often not good at capturing an experience. So now, all the more so if we're talking about the transcendent. So now we're in trouble. We want to praise God. That's one theme, one call. And the other side, we have this call of, maybe silence is the most appropriate thing. One more second, Yoni. Okay, next paragraph. Baram b'mikdash haretel haTorah derech acheret l'kaimet haketuv l'chad v'tila v'hu ayudei nigun nitul dvarim ayudei kli shir. Oh, beautiful. What would be a nigun nitul dvarim? A song that is lacking words. How might one try to overcome the problem of the limitations of language? Right? Exactly. Now, I have to admit, I don't relate to this so much, but a lot of Hasidim really like this idea. Okay? I think Rav Dovah might relate. We'll see in a second if he relates to it. Like, I'm a little stuck. I love words, so I like lyrics. So it's a little bit hard for me to have a song without lyrics and say it's very meaningful. Say, well, how could it be meaningful? There are no lyrics. But many people say it's exactly the opposite, that the song without lyrics is the most meaningful song. Because lyrics always bound you. They're always bound by the limitations of language. And a song without lyrics is not bound by the limitations of language. It could reach those experiences. It could reach that Rush concert that you couldn't just explain in words. So, of course, what's the Rav getting at? So, what is shofar now? Shofar is a form of tefillah without lyrics. It is a way of trying to confront this conundrum. Right? We have a conundrum. We want to express ourselves. We might feel that words don't really capture what we're trying to express. So, what? Okay, so we do that by blowing a shofar. Oh, here we'll make a sound, but it's not bound by language. And if it's not bound by language, then it could go to all the recesses of our experience. Now, why do I think this is a beautiful idea? First of all, I just think it's a profound idea per se about the nature of language and the desire to express ourselves. But I would also say, wait, guys, if shofar blowing is a form of tefillah, what makes sense all of a sudden? Why it would integrate with bracha. What did we say before by the other Rav idea, before we got to this Rav idea? That if I say the bracha with shofar, the bracha of the Raita. If I say the bracha without shofar, the bracha of the Banan. Now, you might say to me, what's the connection? Now, I'm going to make the point even stronger. Let us read the Rav's last paragraph now, guys. Yesh v'ashira ha-domemet v'lemet b'ali de bitui afchutz mikdash. Hatsirov shel tefillah v'shofar, this combination of shofar blowing and davening, mechadesh ki kolah shofar ba'atzmo. Oh, guys, we're about to make Noam Emun's whole week. Okay, hofei cheftza shel tefillah. Okay, are you excited on Noam Emun?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Guys, Noam Emun is such a talented fellow that even when he's trying to lose at Kahoot, he wins. Okay, he's really a talented fellow. Okay, you know, but I have a good chakir for you. At that point, was that a loss or a victory? Okay, you can think about it. Okay, but in any case, what's he getting at? That blowing shofar itself should be categorized as a kind of prayer. But look at the last sentence. This is a very clever point. Acheret, e efshay letzarev shofarim shmon esrei, kamo she'e efshay lechaber netilat luluvim tefillah, o achilat matzah in tefillah. Let's go with that last example. That's a really good example, guys. Could anyone imagine the following? Just like on Rosh Hashanah, we want to integrate the shofar blowing into the davening. I have a great move. Let's do the same on Pesach. What are we going to do? Let's integrate matzah eating into the davening. What will it be, the Ashkenazi-Sephardi split? Ashkenazim will eat matzah only during repetition of the Amidah. And those Sephardim, they'll even eat matzah in the private Amidah. All right, what a great move. Now why, you might say that makes no sense, but why can we blow shofar in the middle? But according to the Rav guys, why does it make total sense? Achilat matzah is a great thing. It's not a form of tefillah. If it's not a form of tefillah, it has no place in the middle of the Amidah. It has no place in the ritual component of davening. However, shofar blowing is a form of tefillah. So I'm not doing something extraneous when I blow shofar in the middle of Amidah. I am doing something that really fits hand in glove in the world of the Amidah. So I think the two, okay, 1 second, guys. I think the two Rav Soloveitchik ideas really go together beautifully. We should think of shofar as the element of tefillah that tries to transcend the limitations of language. Since it's an element of tefillah, it belongs together with davening. That's why we insert it. And it also explains why it could impact on the brachot. When the brachot get together with this other kind of tefillah, the shofar kind of tefillah, the brachot get raised to the deraita. If I'm in a situation where I can't blow shofar, the brachot get reduced to a derabanan. Okay, Benny Klein.
So I really like the comparison to that of a nidun. But that being said, I think anyone who goes around knows like the song and singing is incredible. So for me to listen to the nigun is very powerful. But for me to participate is I would argue even more powerful. So the shofar being done by one person for the klal, I would argue has less of meaning than the nigun himself.
Okay, so look, Benny's question, which also, by the way, is very interesting because it's another topic which is both lundish, halachic, and machshav at the same time, which is in the world of shofar, am I focusing on the mitzvah to blow the shofar? Or the mitzvah to hear the shofar. And there's a famous discussion, it could be next week's Shirklayo, that I was not planning on doing another Rosh Hashanah topic, I was going to go in a different direction. But what do you have here, guys? Some people would say the mitzvah is to blow the shofar. So what do we do every Rosh Hashanah, though? Somehow the chazan, the Baal Tokeh, is our shliach, right? He is doing it for us. Or, no, not at all. He's not our shliach, he's just blowing it, because the mitzvah was never to blow the shofar. The mitzvah for everybody is to hear the shofar. Okay, so that's a famous, famous question, which Benny does touch on your point to some degree. What really is, how is shofar formulated? Is it really a mitzvah about blowing or a mitzvah about hearing? But I don't think it really ruins the Rav's idea if it's a mitzvah about hearing. You know, isn't hearing music a very powerful thing also? What if David Feynman doesn't sing at all during the Rush concert? He just sits there and listens in rapt admiration, right? It could be a great experience, no?
I would argue most people want powerful tunes that sound sweet.
Okay. All right, Noam Emun, what do you think?
According to the Rav, once you establish that okay, fine, it's deraisa, would you say that would also play out the halacha? Like, if for example, I don't know, like, practically how to play out, but if there was a suffix for one of the brachos, would you go back and say it?
Yeah, in theory, it's a good point. You say there might be an afkamina, yeah? And a chami. Yeah.
What's the Rav's source for that? That the shofar is born to feel because it's like a nice core, like, you hold up the thing to be like, there has to be like, some source for it. Like,
okay, so, look, whether we should paskin or not is a good question. But I would say this, a good svarah is a good svarah. You know what, Ellie, there's a famous Rav story, which Paul I know is you know, apocryphal, but I'll tell it anyway, that the Rav said a svarah in shir, and when the students say, what's your source for that? And the Rav answered, a clear and logical mind.
Okay.
What if it's compelling? What if it's really convincing? I'll go on further, Ellie. What if it's both compelling and convincing and solves problems? Answers questions. Maybe that itself justifies it.
Didn't the role also be the atomic bomb analogy that he speaks?
What's the atomic bomb analogy?
He says it in reference to like World War II. Like there needed to be an atomic bomb, but if the chemical makeup didn't work, it didn't work. So he says the same thing about the lung system. Like, there could be a pressing need for something that solves our problems, but if the lung system doesn't
First of all, who'd you hear that atomic bomb thing from? Okay. All right, I'm not going to discuss it. Okay. Wait, are you going to tell me, Eli Jarosho, I can never say any svara unless I have a clear source for it? No, but I have a source to call Doraita. You tell me, what's my source to call Doraita? Rachmana Amar Inkar.
Okay, but then he has to work out the other tomorrow.
Okay, so we did that. What do you want from him? Okay. Now, Ellie, think about it. Couldn't you argue often in life? Look, this is a much larger point, which we can debate some other time, but if I have a conundrum and my theory solves the conundrum, that's reason to believe in my theory. You don't think so?
No, there has to be a reason. There has to be proof.
There is a reason. All right.
You don't sell contradictions by a board.
How do you sell contradictions?
No, he doesn't.
All right, Ellie, we'll debate it some other time. Okay, just remind me your name, I'm sorry. Avishai, yeah, go ahead. Yes, yes. So let me clarify one thing. Avishai, that's a very sharp point. Guys, Avishai is really onto something here. Were you in high school again, Avishai? Okay. All right, Beth Tefillah. Woo! Sage. Okay. Wait, who's the other one? Okay, excellent. Okay, here we go. What? Okay. Oh, Benny Klein, you don't count. I'm sorry. Okay. I was just being difficult. Okay. So that's an excellent point, guys. Let me clarify one thing. This is a good thing to realize in life also. The fact that someone could say a profound idea during the shiur doesn't mean we experience life that way. And I admit I'm guilty of this sometimes also. Oh, that's a very profound idea, but I don't necessarily experience it. And I agree. I can't honestly say that every shofar sound makes me think great ideas about divinity and sanctity, etc. But I would say, Avishai, maybe it's something to try to work on. Like when we're sitting here listening all the time and hoping it just finishes already, right? Instead of that, maybe there are various things you can think about. So I don't know if you guys want to try this out, but there's a famous thing quoted from Rav Sadia Gaon, where Rav Sadia Gaon had 10 associations with the shofar blowing. Said, shofar reminds me of the shofar of the Akedah, shofar reminds me of the shofar of Sinai. So it might be just something for you to do. Like instead of just sitting there saying, oh, Rav Judah is a great shofar blower, right? Sit there and say, there's something I could think about during the shofar blowing. And again, maybe it won't work for every part of it, but for some, I agree with you, Avishai. It's a profound idea that we have to figure out how to realize in our lives. Simcha.
All right. I kind of had an offshoot question off of Benny's question.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So if the bracha is there to enhance the shofar, the question still stands, right? Why aren't we blowing? Why aren't we not listening? But if the bracha, if the shofar sound is just there to enhance the bracha, then you can listen, right? And that's still, you're still...
Okay, so Simcha, I would say the shofar is doing both. It has independent value, and it also plays a role in the bracha.
All right.
Simcha, who was your Gemara Rebbe, Lester?
Rabbi Yaakov Tannenbaum.
Okay. He did a good job. Okay. Oh, that's pretty strong praise there. Okay. Where did you go to high school again?
What?
Where did you go to high school? Where'd you go to high school? Okay. Who knew, guys? It was worth it to come to Shir Kol today. We discovered that the Gadol Dor is actually teaching 12th grade Gemara in the Avnei Academy of Dallas. Okay, that's a pretty important fact to find out. Okay, excellent. Yeah, Simcha, go ahead. Yeah.
But I can tell you, like, this idea that kind of sound is a way of transmitting this sort of transcendence thing that you can't describe in words. I think there's definitely Torah sources for that. Like, for example, this in Navi with Eliyahu, we have this, like, where God just, like, has this sound that just, like, shows his holiness. And he doesn't even have to say any words. So I think, like, this is actually a very well-sourced idea in Torah that sound is by itself, you know, some transcendent experience.
Okay, terrific.
Can be there as its own, you know, thing.
Okay, very good. Naomi Wood, this guy, he's not just Yeshiva, he knows Tanakh also. Hey, Yoni.
Rav Donald mentions in his book that, like, the
No, it's great. Your book's being cited during Shira Klali.
Although the Torah is finite in letters, like it doesn't come as infinite.
Okay.
Like,
no, doesn't that fit with the idea? That the letters and language is about limitation, and you're trying to get beyond limitation.
Well, right? Somehow the Torah, even though it's limited in its form, so it's physical, it's still infinite. So you can say that, like you don't like God, you know, like words can be infinite.
Okay, I'm not going to get into right now. I'll discuss with Rav Dovid next week. I think Rav Dovid would agree that there's a certain aspect of language that's limited. All right, guys, we're going to do a two-minute review, and we're going to call it a day. Okay, two-minute review. What was their reason to think that the brachot are derabanan? What was this? Eli Jarisha, what was the source for that, to say the brachot were derabanan? Because there's a gemara that says, if I've got shofar versus brachot, shofar's deraita and brachot are. Okay, however, what was the reason to think that brachot are deraita? Because another way to use the following phrase, Rachmana Amar Idkar. Okay, so we had a conflict. We talked about two ways to solve the conflict. What was the Eli Jarosh approach? Don't take Doraita so seriously, it's really an Asmachta. Really, everyone agrees it's the Rabbanan. Then we had the David Bentor approach, tweaked by the Rav. What did the Rav want to say? Sometimes Doraita, sometimes the Rabbanan. Together with the Tekiot, it's Doraita. Divorced from the Tekiot, it is the Rabbanan. Why does that work great in the Gemara? Because what's the one place it was driven on, as you guys said before? Dafka, when it's not together with Shofar. Now we said the next point, but why should this go together? Why should it be true? So Rav Soloveitchik said that every religious person has the following conflict. We'd like to express our devotion to God. We'd like to talk about the transcendent. We have a sense that language is inadequate. How do we address that? So maybe shofar blowing, using a musical instrument without lyrics, is a way to try to transcend that problem. And Rav Soloveitchik says, that's why shofar is a form of tefillah. And one shofar, by the way, Eli Jarosh, there's like, he has like eight proofs of the shofar being a form of tefillah. I'll discuss with you some other time. But one shofar is a form of tefillah, then he makes a great point. That's why it could integrate into the Amidah. As we said, no one's ever going to say we should eat matzah in the middle of the Amidah. It just does not make sense. And therefore, a shofar does make sense because it's a form of tefillah. So that would be, I think, a very powerful idea. As Avishai said, it's a very beautiful idea. Realizing it is always tricky. Right? Taking a profound idea and realizing it in the real world is a tricky challenge. I'm just going to move one last point, but hopefully you guys have a taste of Shira Klali, and you'll see why this is a nice part of the Yeshiva week. Last point, guys. The Rav said you'd never find matzah in Amidah. But I don't know if you noticed, he had another example there also. What was his other example? You'll never find? Okay, can anyone raise a question? Why, guys, convert that from a weakness to a strength? What would the Rav say? That lulav may not be a form of tefillah, but a waving of lulav is a form of halal. Right? Maybe that is a way of expressing praise or joy. Right? Maybe there's something joyous about waving lulavim. And therefore, we would not integrate the lulav into the Amidah, but you can very easily integrate the lulav into the recital of halal. All right, guys. Everybody should have a great Shabbat, and welcome to Yeshiva.